Over the course of the week, Mirchan, we'll be working on Yonah Pesach, and then we'll be coming to the Haggadah. And maybe let's get started with one idea in the Haggadah, just to set the table, so to speak, to set the stage and set the mood. The Magid begins, gets started right away with the Manashtana, and with the beginning of the answer to that question. As we'll see as we get further into the Haggadah, the Gemara tells us there are two answers to the question of Manashtana. There's the physical, political focus on slavery and freedom, and then the other answer that the Gemara talks about is the spiritual change, the spiritual odyssey. Those are the two different answers, and we give both answers to the question of Manashtana. We explain that Leil Pesach is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu set us physically free, and by doing that, Leil Pesach is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, set in rolling a process of political freedom that would enable us to become spiritually free and spiritually uplifted at Mount Har Sinai. In between those two answers, we give instructions. We talk about who's involved in CPC Yisrael, and how to be involved in CPC Yisrael, and when was involved in CPC Yisrael, interacting with the different children at the table. And then after the second answer, Mitchila, that's when we get into the rest of the bulk of the telling of the story of Yitzhak Yisrael. Now, in the midst of those instructions, there's a story that's very beloved, but with a little bit of context, is very puzzling. We all know the story of the Chamisha Zakenim, the five famous Tanaim who gather, Maisa Rishua, and so on and so forth. The five Tanaim gather in together, and they have a Seder. And they're going all night long, Sipras Yisrael, right? At Shabbat, Hamidim, how's it end? The Talmidim show up. They knock at the door. They say, "Rabbis, he gives my kiryas shel shachris." It's a very time to say. It's a very morning. It's a very time for shachris. You've mamish been going. The rebbeim have been going with the seder all night long, but now it's Leila seder is over. Now it's time to wrap up the seder and come down. A lot to say about that story, but when we Yeshiva Bachrim have a tendency to ignore names, dates, and places, or like the technical details, sort of get into the heart of the matter. But it's often worth spending a little time focusing on who said what and where it happened. Where did anyone remember? Where did that Maisa occur? Where did this Seder occur? In which city? It's a city that's famous nowadays also. You want to put it on the chat? Raise your hand if your audio is working, or put it on the chat. And remember, where did the Seder occur? Yeah. What do you say? B'nai Brak. That's right, parrots. B'nai Brak. They were super B'nai Brak. So what's the great significance of B'nai Brak? Apparently that's where all the Pesach programs were of yore. And all the five scholars and residents gathered together in B'nai Brak. That's where the Pesach programs were. Who lived in B'nai Brak? One of those five Tanam lived in B'nai Brak. And you know who? The Gemara Sanhedrin mentions which Tanam lived in which Tanam were their Rabbanim in which cities. Gemara speaks about the significance of attaching oneself to Rabbanim, going to them for Dinei Torah, and Bechal attaching oneself to Rabbanim. And the Gemara says a different place. You go to this city, you'll find this Rav. Go to that city, you'll find that Rav. Go to B'nai Brak, you'll find Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was a Rav of B'nai Brak. So it's fascinating. These other Rabbanim were all Rabbanim. They were the leading Talmidei Chachamim in other towns in Eretz Yisrael. So that was just remarkable. They left their Kehilos for Pesach. In our terminology, what does it mean? Like, the rabbi of the shul is not home for Pesach? How does that happen? They all converged in Rabbi Akiva. What's even more surprising is most of those Tanaim, several of those Tanaim, were Rebbeim of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yeshua was a Rabbi of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Eliezer was a Rabbi of Rabbi Akiva. So halo davarhu. You would imagine, the Talmud coming to the Rebbe for Leil HaSeder, but the Rebbeim came to the Talmud for Leil HaSeder? What does that mean? For those who are just joining now, welcome in. Starting with one insight on the Haggadah, the story that appeared in the midst of the instructions at the beginning of the Seder. We review the story of the five Tanaim based on the Midrash HaHalacha, the five Tanaim who get together as in one group to have a Seder together. And what's one of the many things shocking about that story is that they're converging in Bnei Brak, which is Rabbi Akiva's town, even though several of them were his Rebbeim. And that seems sort of upside down. Why the Rebbeim coming to the Talmud for Seder? So one of the suggestions I believe is given by several Achronim, if I remember correctly, including the Aruch HaShulchan, he says as follows. There's been a lot of discussion this year about what to do with Titus Bechorim if one is not able to, we're not going to be able to get together. However, we should be Zocha, that by Erev Pesach we'll be able to get together in groups again. But if that's not the case, so what's going to be the story with? Usually we step out of a Titus Bechorim by making a Siyam. So one solution is, if you're a Bechor, make your own Siyam, or commit someone else in the house to make a Siyam, to take on a... Correct. Very good. So Shechter pointed out that it's very true that for quite some time, it's not so much that it's been the minig to fast, as it was true for centuries, but instead nowadays, really, it's the minig to make a Siyam, or the minig is to go to a Siyam. And that may impact, practically speaking, what you do if you can't make a Siyam yourself. And he thought that it should be appropriate to call into someone else's Siyam, or maybe even to follow Rav Henkin's approach of being poed to the Tainus with Tzedakah instead. The truth is, I was excited to see that Nusach, that it's not the minig to, it's no longer the minig to fast, rather the minig is to go to a Siyam. And because I've been thinking, only partially tongue-in-cheek, for a couple of years, that, it's almost like we've developed a new mini Yisrael to review the last Gemara in Makkos on Erev Pesach morning. And maybe I've shared that nusach with some of you in the past. Because Meseches Makkos is often the most, the most common, Erev Pesach morning Siyam Mesechta. Makkos is a relatively, is a less challenging Mesechta to complete. Less than 30 blot long. A blend of Lamdas and Haggadah. It's certainly a very popular choice for some of those Erev Pesach Siyumim. So I've thought only partially tongue-in-cheek, it's like Minig Yisrael to Chazer the last Gemara. That's what happened, that I see him. Chazer the last Gemara in the Masechta. It happens to be the last Gemara in the Masechta relates to this very profoundly. Because the last Gemara in Maseches Makkos tells another story of Rabbi Akiva and his peers / Rebbeim. And that story, you might remember, is a story of Rabbi Akiva and Ram Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua, and so forth. These Tanaim are all walking Yerushalayim, and they grab a glimpse of the Harabais. You remember what they see? They see something that pulls at the heartstrings. They see the open area of the Harabais. Remember, our mental image of Harabais is tragic in that instead of a Beis HaMikdash being there, there's a mosque there. In the early days, soon after the Khurban, long before the rise of Islam, there meant that what they saw was an empty field. They had memories of the Beis HaMikdash standing in that location, and they just see open, desolate land, an empty, plowed-over lot. Maybe there are even still ruins there. And then they see animals running across, wild animals, foxes, running across the area that had been Kodesh HaKadosh, the area that had been Beis HaMikdash. And the Tanaim all begin to cry. And Rabbi Akiva is smiling. And they look at Rabbi Akiva, worried, like, have you lost your mind? You're smiling to see Churban. So he says, well, why are you crying? They say, wait, why are we crying? You see, we makla mikdash is charev, pouring salt on the wounds. The shualim, the wild animals are playing and running across this area. Kohen Gadol had fear to tread. To paraphrase Milton, and Rabbi Akiva says that's exactly why I'm smiling. He said, you know. And all these beautiful nevuos. It's hard to imagine them. It's hard to conjure up in the mind like what it's going to look like, the nevuos of Geula. So he said, you know, that's right. He said, yes, but now there were these sad nevuos of Shualim Hilchubo. The Navi is describing the way Churban is going to look, and even going to have the foxes running around in Makom Mikdash. He said, we used to try to imagine that also, the sad Nevuah. He said, now that I actually saw the sad Nevuah, B'moei Nayim, so it makes it easier for me to be able to conjure up in my mind what the happy Nevuahs will look like when they are realized as well. Now that the happy nevuah, that there are many happy nevuahs of Geula, the one that Rabbi Akiva mentions is actually one, as Dovid was pointing out, one that we have been zocha to see in actuality now for many, many decades. He says, now that I see the sad nevuah of Shualim Hilchubo, Rabbi Akiva writes, now it's easier for me to imagine in my mind's eye the happy nevuah of the Navi Zechariah. Oh, Yeshu was a Canaan, was a Canaan's Behovah's Yerushalayim. There will yet come a time when the Jewish people will be comfortably enough resettled and ensconced in Yerushalayim, that the old people will be able to sit peacefully. And Yiladim v'Yilados Mesachakim, the little kids will be playing in the streets of Yerushalayim. And Bekiva says that happy Nevuah is so far from our reality right now. But now it's seen the sad Nevuah realized. Makes it easier for me to imagine, to conjure up in my mind's eye, the happy Nevuah realized. Achaz kama, kama, us. We get to see that happy Nevuah, b'mo einayim. As a matter of fact, some of you have probably seen this. If you know where to go in the Jewish quarter of the Old City, off the main track that the tourists take, off of Tiferes Yisrael, and make a right at the right spot, a right and a left and a right, you end up in one of the playgrounds, one of the open stone parks of the Rova, and there's a big rechava where kids play ball, and along the side there are stone benches where older people sit, and they inscribe that Nevuah of Zechariah into those benches. You can stand there and read the Nevuah and see it realized. You see the older people sitting on the benches on the right side if you can, when you come in. Along the left, you see the little kids playing ball, the kids come out of Zilberman's, to take for recess, and they're playing ball. Mamash to see the happy Nevuah Mo'enem, what Rabbi Akiva would have given to be alive now. But Rabbi Akiva was able to look at something tragic, and recognizing how tragic it was also able to see in that tragic thing, it gave him the capacity to see happy things better. And that incredible optimism of Rabbi Akiva is something that we chazer every Erev Pesach. There are many, many indications. There are many indications in Shas. Rabbi Akiva, among his many midos tovos, he was an extraordinary, extraordinary optimist. I'll give you one more example, one which you may have touched on earlier in the year. Certainly a Gemara about Rabbi Akiva with which you're all familiar. We all know about the death of Rabbi Akiva, 24,000 Talmidim. It sounds like it was a very rapid death. It's a remarkable thing. Rabbi Akiva had what sounds like the largest yeshiva of all time. 24,000 Talmidim. It's been said many times that the number of Jews, certainly Jews over Bar Mitzvah, sitting and learning full-time in yeshiva nowadays, has not been topped in centuries. Eretz Yisrael, America, but 24,000 Talmidim in one yeshiva. You take the top 5-10 largest yeshivas in the world right now, they probably don't add up to anywhere near 24,000, one yeshiva. And remember, the Gemara tells Rabbi Akiva started, sounds like Rabbi Akiva only came to learning as an adult, after being someone who not only was not involved in learning, but as a young adult, Rabbi Akiva hated Talmidei Chachamim. And then he turns himself around, learns Aleph Beis, with the encouragement of an absolutely extraordinary wife, goes off to yeshiva, insists, Avdunasin says, he doesn't want to just learn how to daven, learn a little chumash, learn how to bench. He wants to be a Talmid Chacham. And his Rebbein, Rebbe Lezner, Rebbe Akiva, Rebbe Lezner, Rebbe Yeshua, he convinces them to teach him, and he develops into a Yodea Sefer. He develops into a Talmid Chacham. He develops into one of the greatest Talmid Chachamim of all of Jewish history. And one of the Talmid Chachamim with the, perhaps, you know, excepting Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, one of the largest yeshivas of all time. 24,000 Talmidim. Then the Gemara says they all disappear. They all perish. Gemara is mysterious, a little mysterious about exactly how that came to be. I think it's Rav Henkin who suggested that the Gemara may be trying to allude to the fact that they perished during the Bar Kokhba revolt. Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin, Rambam quotes this in Hilchos Melachim, he discusses Mashiach. Rabbi Akiva is of the opinion that the Mashiach would come 70 years after the Churban Bayis Sheni. The Navi Yirmiyahu had prophesied, Od Shivim Shana, there will be 70 years of Galus between the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the building of the second Beis HaMikdash. The Galus Bavel will be a 70-year Galus. That was an Nevuah from Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu was alive at the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. So that at the time of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, at the hands of the Romans, was a Machlokas HaTanoim after the Churban Bayis Sheni, where the Nevuahs Yirmiyahu applied the second time around also. The Gemara records that Rabbi Akiva held that the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu applied then too. That was going to be another 70 years, and then the Bayis HaShlishi would be rebuilt, and Mashiach would come. And many other Tanaim disagreed. They said, no, we have a tradition that Mashiach is not coming before the year 4000, which in the secular calendar year 240. Beis HaMikdash was destroyed around the year 70. Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos about the details. So Rabbi Akiva was of the opinion, another 70 years, around the year 140, will be the Binyan Bayis HaShlishi. And the other Tanaim told them, no, it's going to be at least another 100 years after that. The Yemos HaMashiach won't come before the year 4000, before the year 240. So Gemara and Masechet Sanhedrin, the last parak, they tell the Tanam, tell Rabbi Akiva, Yala Savim Lechayach Avadai Ben Dav Loba. There'll be grass growing out of your jaws. You'll have passed away and pushing daisies long before Mashiach comes. You're not, they other times said to Rabbi Akiva, you're not going to live to see Mashiach. He's not coming before the year 240. More than a century away. And Rabbi Akiva said, no. He thinks the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu applies the second time around. Also, Mashiach will come by the year 140. Rambam seems to understand that many Tanaim agreed with Rabbi Akiva, but there's certainly many Tanaim disagreed with Rabbi Akiva. It seems like there's a big machlokas. What was the machlokas about? It was machlokas about Bar Kokhba, because a little bit less than seven, around 60 some odd years after the Churban Bayis Sheni, there was a major Jewish revolt in Eretz Yisrael, led by a figure, Bar Koziva, Bar Kokhba, a Jew who for a number of years had remarkable success against the Romans. The Romans had a system for how to take over a colony and adapt it and assimilate it into the Roman culture, the Roman Empire, and they discovered it did not work with the Jews. And ultimately, after they finally put down their Bar Kokhba revolt, they realized that they had to root out Torah and Mitzvahs, which is why during the later years of Rabbi Akiva, you have the Hadrianic persecutions when they were brutally, the Romans were killing Jews brutally for keeping Torah and Mitzvahs. But that was after they put down this revolt. This revolt happened around 60 some odd years, the 130s. And for a couple of years, they had surprising success. Bar Kokhba got a government of sorts up and running. We have coins that he struck. And he had a capital. And he had an army. And if you go hiking the Galil, you can still, if you know where to go, you can climb through some of the Bar Kokhba tunnels, the tunnels that his soldiers used. And they had, for a couple of years, almost unparalleled military success against the seemingly all-powerful Roman army. Ultimately, the Romans had to bring in multiple legions. Legions were, I believe, the largest unit of the Roman army. And they ultimately had to bring in multiple legions to put down this revolt. This revolt was being run by a group of guerrillas under guerrilla warfare under Bar Kokhba. If I remember correctly, one of the, if you study the annals, military annals of the Roman Empire, I think it's the 14th Legion, which never, one of the legions that was sent to quash the Bar Kokhba revolt, they never reappear. They seem to have disappeared entirely in fighting Bar Kokhba's forces. So they had, for a couple of years, remarkable success. And so ultimately, they were put down. The fourth bracha of benching, the Haruge Beitar, that speaks to the aftermath of the Roman quashing of that rebellion. But for a couple of years, it looked like Bar Kokhba was really going to pull it off. And Rabbi Akiva and many other Tanaim, Rabbi Akiva Barosham, believed that this, he must be Mashiach. Rabbi Akiva held that the Shivim Shana of Yirmiyahu was applies here, and this looks like it. Looks like it's it. He's putting together a Jewish government there in Israel. He's pushing back against the Romans. Rabbi Akiva held that Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. Rabbi Rami uses very strong language, very powerful language, describing the relationship between Rabbi Akiva and Bar Kokhba. So it's reasonable to assume that Rabbi Akiva, if Rabbi Akiva held, Rebbe held that this is Melech HaMashiach, so obviously the 24,000 Talmidim, they were the Hezdeniks in Bar Kokhba's army. So we understand how they all perished. They perished, Reb Henkin suggests. What the Gemara is trying to say is that they perished. And when the Romans finally, very bloodily, quashed the Bar Kokhba revolt, Rabbi Akiva's 24,000 Talmidim were in that army that was all taken out by Rabbi Akiva, by the Romans. So imagine the moment. Try to get inside Rabbi Akiva's mind. He built himself into Talmud Chacham from knowing nothing. From knowing nothing, he built himself into a Yodea Sefer, a Talmud Chacham, a big Talmud Chacham, a Rosh Yeshiva, one of the largest yeshivas of all time, one of the greatest Talmid Chacham of all time. Hagabi Atzmechem. If when the Gemara wants to describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu showing Moshe Rabbeinu what Talmud Torah would look like in the future, the Gemara describes he puts him into whose shir? Of all the shiurim of the next couple of thousand years, the Gemara describes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts Moshe Rabbeinu into Rabbi Akiva's shir. That certainly that tells you a lot. One of the things that tells you is Rabbi Akiva is one of the great Talmid Chachamim of all time. And he even fielded a candidate for Mashiach. And then so much of what he accomplished falls apart. In a few bloody years, the yeshiva is gone. The Talmidim are gone. His candidate for Mashiach, his hopes for Mashiach, apparently the other Tanaim were right. It's not going to happen for another century, at least. We know now it hasn't happened for many centuries. Rabbi Akiva was an old man by now. And no one would have faulted Rabbi Akiva for retiring. Retiring, moved to Lakewood. Retiring, moved to Florida. Retired, moved to Yerushalayim. What different Rabbanim do? No one would have faulted him for retiring. He led a very full, rich career. And said, we all know, as the Gemara say, but now we've contextualized, we've set the stage to appreciate the next line of the Gemara. What does the Gemara say, Rabbi Osai? After all the 24,000 Talmidim pass away, what does Rabbi Akiva do? Raise your hand, speak up, put it in the chat. What does Rabbi Akiva do? Donnie? Right? He starts a new yeshiva with five Talmidim. Five Talmidim! Can you imagine what the bloggers, what the cynics then must have been saying? I mean, the cynical bloggers, not the positive bloggers. Can you imagine what the cynics' response was? You can hear it. Like, like the old man thinks he could try again. Five Talmidim. The man had 24,000 Talmidim, yeshiva number one. Now he has five Talmidim, yeshiva number two. And there must have been loads of cynics who said, come on, just give it up. Your time has passed. You know, step aside. You can hear people saying that. And Rabbi Akiva said, no, I'm going to try again. And for many people, it probably looked like a fool's errand. You're trying to get five Talmidim? What are you going to commiserate with five Talmidim? And who laughed last? Rabbi Akiva. Because those five Talmidim accomplished everything. Because guess what? How many Divrei Torah do we have from the first group of 24,000 Talmidim? That's right. None. How many names do we know of those first 24,000 Talmidim? None that we know of, unless there's some Tanam that appear, happen to be there. We know of no one who was a member of those 24,000 Talmidim. How about those five, just five Talmidim? Four of those just five Talmidim, according to Rav Eliyahu Dordek, are responsible for 80% of all name statements in Mishnais. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon. The bulk of Talmud Torah and of Shmiras HaMitzvahs, as we have had it for thousands of years, the way Jews have lived Halacha and have understood Agada, the way we have lived and felt and believed for the last 2,000 years, is shaped predominantly by Rabbi Akiva's second yeshiva. The just five Talmidim, mamish changed Jewish history forever. Most of Mishnayos are those five Talmidim. It's a remarkable thing. Rabbi Akiva, it's like the ultimate expression of Rabbi Akiva's optimism. He goes to the Gemara in the end of Malchus. He sees in Churban, he looks at Churban, he sees the Churban, but in looking at Churban, he also, it gives him greater insight into Geula. His yeshiva is destroyed, looks like everything he worked for is in shambles, and he sees in it the opportunity to try again in ways that would be almost unbelievably productive. So I believe it's the Aruch HaShulchan and others who suggest that the that's why we circle back to where we started. That story of the five Zakenim. So they all got together in. Bnei Brak. Looks like a little insignificant detail until you realize Bnei Brak is Rabbi Akiva's town. Why the Rebbeim coming to the Talmud? So I believe it's several Achronim, Aruch HaShulchan and others who suggest right now he was the Rebbe because they were his Rebbeim in terms of the rest of Torah, but he was their Rebbe in optimism. That's what you see in the Gemara in Makkos, that's what you see right here. They needed to know, how do you make a Seder? We're going to celebrate Pesach. Mamish. It could be a discussion. Did this story happen before the Bar Kochba revolt or after the Bar Kochba revolt? But either way, it certainly happened after the Churban Bayis. Shani, trying to figure out, what are you going to have a Seder to celebrate? Pesach. Celebrate that. No Korban Pesach. So far from Beis HaMikdash. Again, we, you and I, are almost 2,000 years away from the Beis HaMikdash. We're already used to the fact that the Seder, we've forgotten that the Seder is supposed to have a Korban Pesach. You learn the last parak of the Rambam's Hilchos Chametz Matzah, parak Ches. He takes you through the Seder. He reminds you again and again that ideally the center halachic centerpiece of the Seder is the Korban Pesach. Literally, it's there. And it's the focus of attention, and the whole flow of the Leila Seder revolves around leading up to the Korban Pesach. So we've already gotten used to the fact that we work without it. For them, that was very fresh. They had memories of a Seder with a Karim Pesach. Wait, it's supposed to be. They're going to celebrate a Seder with a Karim Pesach. A Seder where we don't feel Geula. A Seder where we feel so far from Geula. So they came to Rabbi Akiva to teach them, to model for them, how to have an optimistic Seder even when things look grim. And they looked very grim then. Especially if this was after the Bar Kochba revolt. Super, super, super grim. They were afraid for their lives. Some suggest that the Talmidim outside were also keeping guard, so if the Romans came, they would all scatter before they were caught and sentenced to death for keeping the mitzvahs of Leil HaSeder. And Rekiv is the one who showed them the way forward. And that's why, as I said before, that you have this section of instructions at the beginning of the Haggadah, right after we give the Avodah Mayuna, the initial answer to the question of Einstein, we take a break to give instructions. So part of the point of this story is to tell you, it's Seder's for everyone, even for big time Yecham who know all the answers, and So this story definitely illustrates both of those points. These were great Tanaim, and they were definitely, they were Marba as much as you could be. They went all the way until Shachris. But there's also an added layer added by it. It's not just Maisarav. Oh, you see that the big Tanaim Chaimim participate. You see they participate all the way until the morning. But it's also, you see they participate even when it didn't feel so simchadik. They found a way to really get into it. Even when they were looking forward to Pesach, they weren't looking forward. They were looking ahead to Pesach, and they felt like it's going to be very hard to be motivated. They managed to, they were so motivated, they went until the morning. They lost, sounds like they lost track of time. And we'll close with this. I think, I'm not sure, it could be it's Rabbi, Lord Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, who made the following suggestion. I don't remember for sure if he's the one who made the suggestion or not. That to in this vein, to read the last line of that brisa poetically. Till the time they were misapim mitzias mitzrayim kol olos talad all night long they're going mitzias mitzrayim. Until when? Until the time Amidim came and said, Rabboseinu, Rebbes, Higiyazman Kriyashma Shal Shachar, the time for saying morning Kriyashma has arrived. So Pashup Shad again, it means that they had gone all the way, all night long, as much as one could possibly remember. It's no longer nighttime. It's time now for the next mitzvah. See, it's Sipritiyas Mitzrayim is the mitzvah of the nighttime. And that's certainly Pshat. But one could also suggest there's a poetic angle to it, which is they were involved in this avoda of Rabbi Akiva, of seeking to find the light in the darkness, of finding the simcha and the optimism even when things look grim. And they kept at it, and they kept working at it until the Talmidim were able to come and say, he gives my kirshan shal shachris. That now we've, now is the time for a shachris, for a morning kriyashma. Based on the way Tosus, I believe it is, on Dafid Beis and Bracha's comments, that by Kriyashma of Ma'ariv, you say Emes ve'emuna. Kriyashma of Shach, you say Emes ve'yatzif. V'hagid ba'boker chazdecha ve'menascha ba'leilos. At nighttime, when things are dark, whether literally dark or metaphorically, when things are unclear, so then it's emunascha ba'leilos. Sometimes you have to rely on emuna. We don't say HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed. And at a time when it's boker, when it's morning, literally or poetically, when things are clear, a time in history or a time in a person's life, but things are clear. So then you, at the time when things are clear, so then you hagaboka chazdecha. Then you see Hashem's chesed, you can talk about it directly. If not, if it's laila, so then emunasra. You have to know that Kadosh Baruch Hu is taking care of us, even if you don't see it. And that's why at night we say emes ve'emuna. It's true. That's what we believe, even though we don't see it. In the morning we say emes ve'yatzin. It's true, and it's clear. It's well established. So the Talmidim, they were working the avodah of optimism so much until the Talmidim, even the Talmidim were able to say, we're ready for a Shachar's Dikr Kirishma. We're ready for Emes Yatze. We're beginning to see Yad Hashem. We're beginning to see Chazdi Hashem. We don't just have to work on, well, we know it must be. I know that Kadosh Baruch Hu takes care of us. I know Kod Ma'ayin Dav Rachma on top of it. There must be that Kadosh Baruch Hu takes care. It must be somehow everything's for the best. They worked on the Avodah of Akiva so much, they were actually able to see it. So that's meant to set the stage for the entire Seder. Definitely, I think many of us are, if we're honest with ourselves, not 100% sure what a Seder is going to look like. It definitely will look, for many of us, different than the past. Maybe there'll be grandparents that are usually at the Seder that aren't allowed to come medically. Or other extended family that aren't allowed to come medically. It looks different. At the same time, to put things into context, as Baruch Hashem, you're going to be able to have a Seder with your family with as much shmur matzah as you want and plenty of access to maror. And play the access to kosher food. And you're allowed to walk into your backyard. And you can open your windows and sing hallel as loudly as you want. And you're not worried about religious persecution. And Baruch Hashem, to live in a time and a place when there's total religious freedom. And you can keep mitzvahs as much as you want. And we're not running for our lives from pogroms is an incredible amount to be grateful for. That's just the tip of the iceberg. At the same time, it is going to be, for many of us, very different. And that's the avoda of Rabbi Akiva. And that's the way we start the Seder every year. For many, many centuries, Jews under very, very trying circumstances must have taken strength from Rabbi Akiva. Jews in the 11th and 12th centuries in France and Germany, when the Crusader mobs were headed their way and were going to reach them in another month. Jews in the late 1400s, early 1500s in Spain. Jews in the 1930s and 40s in Germany, across Europe. V'chulu, v'chulu, v'chulu. You know, there have been times big when there were, you know, apprehensions big and small that Jews were facing. To be able to celebrate a Seder is not always simple. But that's the avodah, and we definitely have unique concerns this year, and at the same time, placed in context, the brachas compared to other periods in Jewish history are staggering. That's not at all to take away from the losses that Klal Yisrael has already suffered from this virus, and the concerns and the fright that many have. But that's the avodah of Rabbi Akiva, to have a super, super simcha d'ka seder. And to be able to sit down to Seder with whomever you're going to have the chance to sit down with, and to learn the lessons of Yad Hashem that we, from 3,500 years ago, from the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and figure out how it plays out with us. I think that's just an idea that you will probably be able to share in a briefer format at your Seder. You figure out, as with everything, as I said, you want to attenuated and calibrated for whoever is at the Seder. And for ourselves, it sets the stage, number one, for the whole notion of the profundity of the language of the Haggadah, and sets the stage for the mood going that we adopt as we head into Pesach. Over the course of the rest of the week, Mitzvah, tomorrow morning, we're going to start at 9:30 with some halachic in Yanei Pesach. And then we're going to start the morning that way, and then head to Ian Seder tomorrow from the Halachic Yom Pesach. And right now, we're going to head into Ian Seder with our Chavrusas.